I just love when Stacey's talking about, you know, it took me to Olive Garden and never get laid ever.
The Olive Garden. Yeah, you know, I'm not afraid of it. I love Olive Garden.
Soup, all you can eat.
Oh, fuck yeah. Dude, the breadsticks, and you get a little, like, gravy boat of fucking fettuccine Alfredo sauce with the breadsticks. That's a fucking...
I just dip the breadsticks in the salad dressing.
Yeah, too. That, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all you need.
Fuck all of you that are turning their noses up right now.
Welcome to Because Nerd. This will be our 15th episode. I'm your host, Chris Farrell, joined today by two of my best and oldest friends, Clint.
Hey, hey.
And Brad.
Yo.
And we also are joined by a special guest, Robert Bevan.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no. Welcome. Glad to have you. The author of the Critical Failures series, which is a D&D-inspired satirical story.
It's fucking awesome.
Which we're going to be getting into here shortly. So, Robert, welcome to Because Nerd.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello.
Thanks for coming on, man. We're huge fans of your books, man. Those are some of the coolest books out there, especially for folks like us. So, very cool.
Thank you.
Man, I got a lot of funny looks. The part where the four horsemen are trying to get into the Horsehead Inn, and he said, Cooper, if you come out here and suck my dick, I'll let you live. And Cooper says... No, thanks. I sucked your mom's dick last night. Tasted like ham. Threw me off dick for good. And I just fucking died. And everybody's looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? What made it better is, you know, you can barely see the earbuds that I wear.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's so great.
Unplug the headphones. Let it loose.
Yeah, right.
Just let it rip.
I don't know.
Yeah, just pull it to a stoplight, just fucking blaring Critical Failures, just like letting everybody just get a taste of it.
Oh man, yeah, those books are fucking awesome, man. When I came across them, I mean, I've finished most of them a long time ago, but I'm looking forward to 8 coming out, and I've been telling all my friends about it. I mean, we kind of binge them right away and just can't wait for the next ones. When does number 8 come out?
I don't know. The short answer is very shortly after I finish it.
Later, man. Later.
The first draft's finished. I'm about halfway through the first round of edits.
Awesome.
But for you audio listeners, though, at that point when I release it, that's when the audio recording starts several months later.
Yeah, I imagine that takes a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, it's kind of frustrating having, like, a complete story, but, you know, my audio guys can't get started because, you know, without knowing exactly what the words are, they can't.
Yeah, seems like a minor impediment, but I guess I could see where you stumble on that one a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different writing. I mean, yeah. All right, I've got, like, the whole bulk of the thing. I can go back in a document and, you know, delete a word, add a word. You can't do that in audio.
Right. I got to say, man, it's Jonathan Sleep, right? He's the narrator.
Jonathan Sleep, yeah.
He's fucking awesome, man. Like, I couldn't, anybody else narrated any of your books going forward, I don't even know if I could feel the same about it. I mean, he really adds such a cool voicings to everybody and the characters and stuff. You kind of get committed into knowing that. And it's the same thing. If you changed any of those voices or that narrator, it's not the same. So how did you start working with Jonathan Sleep?
A stroke of dumbass luck. I got so lucky. Because when I started out, I didn't know audiobooks were as big a thing as they are. And you know, and for what? A pittance. Then a friend of mine from high school said, hey, my boyfriend and his friend are interested in producing your audiobook. And I was like, whatever, fine. As long as I don't have to do anything.
Oh, yeah.
And then that made the biggest difference in my career, bar none.
Wow.
Who's the narrator that you were saying?
Oh, Jonathan Sleep.
Yep, Jonathan Sleep.
I like how it was like a subtle threat, the way you talked about. You're like, if you lost that, it would change everything.
You're fucking, it's done. It's like, fucking done.
Just letting you
just
know.
Just got a flop. It's terrible. No, that's not what I meant. But I mean, I've read books, you know.
No, I mean, you're right, whether it's from you or whatever, but you are not the only one. I think maybe more of my fans are Jonathan Sleep fans than they are mine.
you're just a good symbiote.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, right.
I was gonna ask about that too. Like, is this? I know you have Authors and Dragons. I know you write quite a bit. You've got the books. I've been reading some of the blogs that you post too, and it's like trying to stay motivated, trying to make sure that you can, you know.
I haven't blogged in 3 years. Where are you reading this?
Blog a
once it's on the internet, man.
Well, you know what? Speaking of your blog, that back on February 24th of 2017, there's a behind the scenes of the Critical Failure screen adaptation. So,
oh wow, you are going back there.
Yeah, was that a real thing? Like somebody actually wanted to do a screenplay of it?
That's still a real thing. That's
oh, nice.
All right, real is, I guess, subjective. That guy, he did pay me to option my rights twice, and he worked his ass off too. He did a lot of things and reached out to a lot of contacts, and he taught himself the rudimentary basics of animating to just try and spur something further, but never got off the ground. Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. So after 2 years of that, we're still in touch and we're still planning. You know,
yeah.
Maybe we can get something going.
Kickstarter's pretty big now, you know?
Kickstarter, whatever.
Yeah, Kickstarter would be great. That'd be awesome, man. Right now, too, especially with D&D and like just it seems as though like gaming in general is starting to get kind of bigger than it's ever been. So it's like kind of the time to maybe capitalize on trying to do something like a Kickstarter to get it going. Cause I mean, I'd definitely buy into that. That'd be awesome, man.
So yeah, right now I signed a, what's called a shopping agreement, which is like an option, except I don't get paid, but, got some other irons in the fire for when that runs out.
Just to poke people.
Well, yeah. Why didn't you make my movie?
That's a hell of a stick.
For sure. More memorable that way, though.
Right.
So, look, we haven't talked any about the story. Like, Clint, you were doing a good job telling me earlier. Give some setup to what this is all about, like what the stuff we're talking about is.
Could probably fuck it way up, but I'm going to let Robert go ahead and talk about his own books.
Oh, it's, I mean, not a story that hasn't been told before. A group of gamers, tabletop gamers, get thrown into the game world.
D&D cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
I like to think mine's different just because of the tone and the, well, yeah, the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what's so fucking appealing about it, though, man, is like everybody in your books and the group of guys, like we all met each other through role playing. Like my first day at high school, I met these guys talking about riffs, said, hey, you guys play role play. I do Dungeons and Dragons. So we got together that way. And there was always a connection between us because that's how we kind of knew each other and played. And in the games that we played, we were basically Cooper and Tim and the personification of the guys in your books. So it's the same shit I'd say. I'd be making all kinds of dick jokes and mom jokes and all that.
Me too, yeah. I think the success I've had so far is because it does resonate with a lot of people.
Mom and dick jokes are just ubiquitous.
Yeah. Well, back in the 80s when they tried to say that D&D was satanic, it really had nothing to do with Satan. It was just like, there's too many dick jokes, too many mom jokes. It's crazy. We got to shut this down.
The world wasn't ready yet. It needed a little more time to evolve.
That's I do wonder how the books would have done back in like 84, 85, if everybody'd still be, you know, as popular as it is now.
That's something I've thought about as well. If I traveled back in time like and I got stuck there, I was like, well, I know these books, yeah, they were successful in my time. Can I wait until I write them again? Or
am I going to fuck the timeline up?
Yeah, roll the dice in the 80s.
And then it bombs and you're like, what the fuck, man? Yeah.
No, I'm murdered in prison.
So the characters in the books, are they just kind of loosely based off of your personification of you or characters you've played or people that you know?
So I've got a little tagline that says, what if you and your friends got to live the game for real?
Yeah.
What if you and your friends were assholes? I think Julian was loosely based on a guy I played with once. I always tell people Cooper and Tim are like the worst parts of me. And then Dave, you know, but Dave's just Dave.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows a Dave.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Wait, Dave? Who? Dave? Fuck Dave.
The dwarf cleric. Which we needed a cleric in the party.
Yeah, dude. What's crazy for me, and like, and hopefully I don't, you know, hang myself here with anybody listening to the podcast, but in playing Dungeons and Dragons, just role playing in general, you know, we all do it. We're into it. We love it. We have a good time. But there's always that one person that'll show up to a game, or somebody that you know that's super hard into it, where that person lives and breathes it, and they're like almost never out of character.
Do you even D&D, bro?
Like, do you? Right, exactly. Yeah, you know. And that's kind of how I saw the bad guy in your books.
Freaking Mordred. Everybody's got a Mordred. Wait,
slow down. The bad guy.
Yeah.
Damn.
The antagonist. I wouldn't narrow him down as the bad guy.
Your archetypist, Clint?
All right. Fair enough.
All the protagonists are the bad guy. Like, the only real good guy in the first book is maybe Captain Righteous.
Very, this is true. This is very true. Very true.
I love that name too. Captain Righteous Justificus.
Oh, Lord.
But yeah, the Mordred is who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it seems like every time, you know, you'll end up finding guys that are like yourself that kind of you can talk to on the same level. And there's always that one guy who's the DM and he's out to kill absolutely everybody. And no matter what you do, he's going to get you.
Oh, yeah. You want to find those guys. Go look at my 1-star reviews on Amazon. And they got what they deserved.
Right.
The only person I sympathize with is Mordred. Oh,
are you looking for a dungeon master who's full contact? Try my 1-star reviews.
Yep. That's yeah, right. Do you want to have no fun at all? Then call me.
Do you want someone where the tension is dialed up to 11?
I would have been more okay with that, but there's this one session, because I used to teach English in Korea for a long time, and I moved to a new town, didn't know anybody. I got on the internets and found a group of people playing D&D in the next town over, so I went over there. And my discomfort was, like, they were really into it. Nobody was trying to kill me or fuck me or anything. But they were all, like, doing voices for their characters and, like, were having side discussions, like, in real time about their gods and their religion. And that's not how I play.
You weren't in character enough? Like, you wouldn't put on the persona hard enough?
No, I didn't.
they couldn't right. relate to you? They were, like... They're like trying to talk to you and like you're talking out of character and they're like seeming all confused and baffled.
No, they didn't go that far. Just like they were so far in character, I felt like I wasn't living up to it. And I can't wait to get out of here. Have you ever gone to another group that had a wildly different playing style than what you're used to?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What? You played with another group?
Nope. I'm just kidding, man. No, I didn't cheat on you. I promise.
What?
No, I every time I play, there's always somebody trying to fuck somebody else in the game all the time. So it conjures up one specific time, right? So my friend and I, he was my roommate or whatever.
And his character would quit trying to have sex with you?
That's weird. He just tried to fuck me all the time. I'm like, dude, we're not even playing right now. Get out of my bedroom. And he's like, hey, I'm going to roll a d20 to come over there and seduce you. I was like, God damn it. Go to bed.
I got a 18. Pretty good.
You gotta let me in. Fucking shut up, man. But no, he was like, hey, I got this group of people that I met from the comic shop down the road. So I was like, yeah, I'll come over. Let's hang out. So he and I show up and we go in. It's like a hoarder's apartment. There's just shit everywhere. A bunch of like reptiles and like fish tanks that are empty. Smells like an asshole in there. It was crazy. And we show up and they're all probably 50 plus. And at the time, you know, he and I were probably 25, 26 years old, right? Partied, liked to drink, have a good time, and play D&D. But we sit down to play, and of course, I'm the Cooper of the group, you know, and I'm like trying to make jokes and like kill people and inadvertently fuck everything up. And there's this one lady.
There was a lady there.
I mean, so to speak.
I use that term loosely. Yeah. I use that term loosely. Probably edit this out, Chris, but...
None of this is going in. This is useless.
Any females, I go into the game and it's like, I'm the most beautiful elven maiden you've ever seen. My charisma is a fucking 40 and I'm going to roll to seduce your character. I'm like, stop it. I just got here.
Sorry, that's what kind of D&D game we play. You are going to be a trophy. You, man. So,
it's, I'm telling you, it's like every time there's like the certain kind of people that you play with. And every time I'd show up to a new game that weren't, they just weren't people
Clint's
I knew.
Getting fucked.
It was always somebody trying to fuck you.
I'm imagining at some point during this session, like you and your friends sitting there with all these older people, like the whole thing's been weird, like just constant weird sexual advances to both of your characters. And you're just like, what the fuck's up with these people? And like at some point your friend leans over to you and it's like, I think we're the entertainment. Like,
uh-oh. Right. Exactly. So I was going to say, I knew that you taught English in South Korea. So when you were over there, you were playing D&D in South Korea as well?
Well, that was my first attempt. And that didn't go so hot.
Okay.
Years later, I had a group of friends. And we'd Friday, Saturday night, we'd go to bars and stuff and just drink. And then, but you know, we all taught English in Korea. We're going to the same bars. We're having the same conversations. And you know, nothing's really changing. And it's kind of boring. And it's getting kind of expensive. And because we all got families. And and then I came back to the States on vacation once. And I found all my old D&D books in my parents' garage. I thought, So I brought them back to Korea with me. I said, all right, guys, what if we tried this? We can still drink. Right. But we can do it at somebody's apartment. It'll be a lot cheaper. We'll have more stuff to talk about. And yeah, and so it caught on. And
you know, actually, that's a good point too, Robert. When you were playing over there, so all the guys you were playing, or all the people you were playing with over there in Korea, they were all other English teachers playing with you, or did you guys have?
Occasionally, we'd have a Korean join. Yeah, nobody had enough English ability to, you know, learn the rules in the books. And I tried and tried, but I could not find a Korean translation either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Just not a thing that was done over there.
the direct translations first. I mean, I know Korea's got some way out there direct translations that are just like, whoa, what the? That's not what that says. But funny side story about translating English from other languages, right? I was shopping for a car in Saudi Arabia. And I hit the little Google Translate on one of them, and it says jackflap spray okay. It's like, oh, all right.
What?
What was that supposed to say?
I have no idea.
I say Mazda.
Hey, what's there not to understand? The
jackflap spray.
It was fine.
Does your car not have jackflap spray? What kind of crap are you driving?
Oh man,
that's like, awesome.
That's Bukkake, isn't it?
Oh shit!
What is?
Before we started recording, I saw you send a message. Are you up for a Killing Batman?
I was going to see if you wanted to participate today in a Killing Batman, and I'm willing to throw it out there if you're willing to participate.
So that's a regular thing you do?
Yeah.
That's one of our segments.
It's a bit, yeah. So we've got a couple bits that we do, right? And basically, if you can agree with me that Batman is terrible, right? Batman, Robin, Nightwing, it's just a bunch of dudes that think they know fucking karate, and they dress up and they run around and, like, you know, try to kick people's asses.
That's funny, because I'm actually not a fan of the superhero genre at all.
Perfect.
But Batman's kind of my exception.
Yes.
Woo.
See? Yes.
Yeah. Man.
This is fucking perfect.
All right.
If anybody walked past him and coughed in his general direction right now, he'd get COVID-19 and die.
Because he didn't have a faceplate.
Because he doesn't have a fucking face mask.
He's got the opposite of a face mask.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Oh, that's awesome. That is fucking awesome.
All right, lay it out for me, Clint.
So for my Killing Batman this week, tried to find somebody that that would kind of loosely relate to Mr. Bevan's books and in the fact of like magic, D&D. I tried to look for wizards. I tried to look for like, who can I bring into Killing Batman that would kind of relate to that, you know, to that genre of role playing. I couldn't find anybody.
Unsuccessful. So that's not what we're getting. So go ahead and Write that one out of your memory right now.
it was terrible. It was turned up no fucking nothing at all. But I did find one thing here. This isn't who I picked for killing Batman, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
So here's more shit that doesn't even matter.
Doesn't matter, but we're going to talk about it fucking anyway. So in DC Comics, right, there's a character named Zatanna. She's a wizard that wears a top hat and like a fishnet stocking. She wears like one of those shirts that looks like a tuxedo, but it's like a t-shirt with a tuxedo on it. It's very confusing, but I guess not really. I didn't realize it in looking that up. She has a nephew named John Zatara. Her name is Zatanna. His name's Zatara. Obviously, that was a...
They're actually only related through marriage.
it's just a coincidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. And I know this is dragging out quite a bit here, but as I was looking through this, and both he and his cousin are descendants of the Homo Magi.
Who? What?
I wasn't the one who giggled when you said Homo Magi. I mean, I giggled later.
That was going to be giggled at. There was no situation where that was going to be uttered and not giggled at.
Seriously, man.
Homo Magi.
And I'm like, damn it. Why?
No, I can't stop giggling. That's definitely something I could use.
Yeah, exactly. In your next, whatever book you're writing next, you can just throw in there that, you know, whatever wizard in the book is descendant of the Homo Magi. I think that'd be a good read. So the person for killing Batman today is Jason Hart. His name is the Protector.
Wait, I thought we were doing the big titties magic hat woman.
Oh no, that's too easy. That's way too easy. Come on,
she could kill Superman. We don't need to talk about it.
I'm sorry, I was misinformed.
Come on, we gotta make it harder than that. That's too easy. Batman, you know,
she was making it harder.
Exactly.
That's what she does.
100%. So back in the 80s. DC Comics came out and they said, listen, we need to put together a drug PSA. We had Nancy Reagan. She was like, yeah, how do we get kids off of drugs? Let's put it in comic books. That'll do it.
Nancy Reagan's like, we got to talk to Batman right now.
No, really.
Ron, get me the Caped Crusader.
Ron, we've got a drug problem in America today, and we need Batman.
All right, Nancy, I'm calling him now.
Well, basically, so DC came out, and they were like, all right, how do we get this drug PSA out, you know, to keep kids off of drugs? And they said, okay, well, we've got the Teen Titans, and Robin is a great spokesperson for the anti-drug PSA. Well, the funding behind all this came from Keebler, the cookie makers. This is a real shit.
The cookie cartel.
Yeah, well, Keebler is code for cartel, yes.
Yeah.
What are they putting in those cookies?
And, Keebler came out and said, we want to license Robin to be able to be the spokesperson for anti-drug PSA. Well, Robin was already bought and sold by Nabisco. True shit.
What are the chances that this is the world that we lived in, where one cookie company was like, you know who we need? The sidekick to Batman. And another cookie company was like, bitch, I've already got that.
Yeah, we own the sidekick to Batman.
That actually happened in the movie Justice League.
Look, this sounds like a better story than what happened in Justice League.
Anything is a better story than what happened in Justice
League. I would watch this story of cookie companies fighting over Robin before I want to watch any of that again.
It would have been a far better movie.
100%. They're like, all right, guys, I got an idea for you. We're going to do this whole Keebler Nabisco beef.
Look, we're going with Cocaine Jim and the cookies.
Right, exactly. You guys, you know what we need? No drugs and fucking cookies.
Hey, look, I don't know about this no drugs part, but you say whatever you want in the commercial. I don't really give a fuck. All right, let's do this.
We all know what it's all about. Oh, my God. And can you imagine, like, the drug wars between Nabisco and Keebler? Like, the elves fighting?
All the elves are Colombian.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, my God. Oh. All right. So, it was then when the elf Little Wing fell from grace. What the fuck? Where was I? Oh, yeah. So Keebler needed Robin. Fucking Nabisco said we own Robin. So basically they had to take the comics and they literally use like white out, whatever. So there's a lot of weird shit that goes on in the comics because it was written for Robin, but they had to interject this guy named Protector. And it gets crazier from that because his backstory goes, his name was Jason Hart. He was a student that went to a normal high school, 18 years old, and he was a good student. He was like the number one football star, great at sports, and everything was cool in his life. Everything was going good.
He was Zack Snyder.
He was Zach Morris, you mean? Zack Snyder. Yeah, the fuck, the 300 guy?
So yeah, sorry.
We're talking about Justice League.
All right, so the Protector, back to this guy, right? So Jason Hart was a student. He was in high school. He discovered one day that his little cousin, Ted, they don't really say how old Ted is, but Ted had tried some drugs, right? And apparently, Ted became an addict very quickly. So he's like a seventh grader, snorting whatever, fucking doing heroin.
He was like, what have I been doing in my life? This shit's the bomb.
He snorted one of the marijuanas.
Snorting that marijuana.
This is the bee's knees.
So basically, he goes to this guy, Jason Hart, the better cousin. He goes to his little cousin. He goes, hey, man, you got to get off drugs. Drugs are really bad. And he's like, fuck you, man. I love drugs. Can't eat a dick.
Drugs is everything, man. Everything in my life is because of drugs.
He's like, you're a fucking square. Get out of my house, you dick. I don't even like you anymore. And he's like, but you got to be the football star. He's like, fuck you. I'm making money banging people.
Fuck you, I got drugs, man.
Drugs are good. Open your mind, asshole. So he can't connect with his little cousin. And he basically says, okay, what does my little cousin love? He loves superheroes. So he goes to the store. He buys some spandex. He makes a costume for himself. And he's like, I'm going to show up and talk to a little Teddy. And I'm going to pretend I'm this superhero named the Protector. And I'm going to tell him that drugs are bad.
So he starts cosplay. So he's like, how am I going to get my little cousin off drugs? Maybe if I started cosplay. That's the solution right there. Yeah.
Well, this all goes down. And apparently he shows up and there's a drug deal going on. His little cousin Teddy is buying some smack from the local drug gang.
What a time to walk up.
And he shows up and he goes, hey guys, stop selling Teddy drugs. And he proceeds to get his ass handed to him by these drug dealers. And so basically little Teddy, doesn't stop doing drugs.
Teddy goes and kicks him in the nuts too. He's like, who the fuck are you, man? I'm trying to buy some drugs. Get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so basically he gets his ass handed to him. His little cousin dies.
Oh my God.
Like the next episode, he has an overdose and dies, which is fucking terrible. I was like, oh my God. And so through all of this, Nightwing hears about it and Nightwing takes him under his belt and basically trains him how to be a martial artist. And that's where you would think the story would end. But actually, he becomes a badass hand-to-hand fighter, but then checks himself into the Sanctuary, which is the drug rehab for DC, and dies of an overdose. So the Protector was around for 3 issues and then died of a drug overdose.
Was he voluntarily taking drugs?
Yes. Yes. So they find out later in the episodes that he was also a drug addict who got hooked on smack. Through this entire process of trying to fix his cousin Teddy, he becomes a drug addict himself and overdoses.
Take the plank out of your eye, motherfucker.
Exactly.
Wait, how did Nancy Reagan feel about this? This doesn't sound like it's going so well.
I feel like Nancy Reagan got gypped on her propaganda campaign.
100%. 100%. That was a 180 for Nancy Reagan. She bankrolled this whole thing, and she's like, what the fuck, he dies? That's terrible. Yeah.
Like, no. So, it's like, it's meaningful. Like, people are going to feel it. They're going to be like, what a dumb character. I don't want to be that character. Like, you know.
I don't want to dress up in cosplay and get hooked on smack. So
16 needles hanging out of his arms. Stop taking drugs, Jimmy.
The reason the drug dealers kicked his ass is because he was there to score, probably. Yeah. And Teddy was like, oh shit, what are you doing here, cousin? He's like, get out of my fucking hood, kid.
He was dressed up so nobody would recognize him.
Yeah.
He could make a clean getaway.
Yeah, he showed up and he was like, I'm here to get some smack, guys. Oh, Teddy, what the fuck are you doing here? Don't do drugs, Teddy. Get out of here. It's not good.
So I'm going to pop the question. How does a Protector kill Batman?
So I think at the moment when Protector showed up to help Teddy to deny the drug dealers a chance to sell him drugs, that Robin had been already scoping out the Protector. And he's like, oh shit, this is about to go down bad. Contacts Batman at this point and is like, I think some shit's going on. Like, some shit's about to come to a head. Batman's like running to the scene. But now, like, Protector's like realizes it's in over his head pretty quick. Like he thinks it's just gonna like shoo him away, but like they all like go to the trunk and pull out, you know,
fucking irons and pipes and bats.
Yes, like next thing you know, he's like in his car, like you know, speeding out and just like T-bones Batman, and completely.
Because like, again, Batman is a normal dude. Just gonna throw it out there again,
and that's it. Like,
actually, it would almost be better if Batman showed up to the scene. He's like, "Hey, leave that kid alone. Drugs are bad." And they just beat the shit out of Batman. Just like hit him once in the mouth, and his teeth go flying into his throat. And he's like, "God damn it, again with the fucking cowl." And then they just fucking rip his cowl off and start kicking his ass. And they take his credit cards and they charge up his accounts. And when Enterprise just goes under, I think
that's it.
That's it. Batman dies from a bat to the face. Wayne Enterprises then becomes a front for the mafia, whatever, the drug cartels. And then we have like an Ozark situation on our hands. And then the mob takes over Wayne Enterprises. They put Batman out there, but now he's slightly darker skin.
Not Pablo Batman.
He kind of looks like he's Cuban, but they're like, "Batman, you got a good tan." He's like, "Oh, no, I know I'm, you know, whatever." But he's really not fighting crime. He's just slinging dope across Gotham. So, like, Batman becomes Ronaldo Man, and then he's just slinging dope.
Do you need any bat pills?
I am here to save the day and sell you an eighth of coke. He shows up to the scene. He drives the cops away, and he's like, "Now we can get down to real business. I've got an eighth for $2.50. I've got a fucking eight ball for $50. What do you need?"
Superman shows up, and he's like, "Bruce, what's going on?" He's like, "Who's Bruce? Anyway, hey man, hey Superman, you want some pills?" Bruce,
what happened to your accent?
What's going on here, Bruce? No, man, it's nothing. It's just my accent.
I am Batman.
That's how Batman talk, you know.
He's all, "Bruce, when did you grow out your Fu Manchu mustache and get really tanned?" I went down to a vacation on the Bat Island. So, you know what's crazy? Just in weird facts after looking this up, Robin in one of these episodes has a dinosaur tracking boomerang.
You don't have a dinosaur tracking boomerang?
Are there dinosaurs?
There's fucking dinosaurs.
Beast Boy can turn into one, so I know there's that.
All right, so it's not tracking fossils like with a...
No, it's actual dinosaurs, apparently, yeah.
That doesn't sound very handy.
No, not at all.
If only I had this 65 million years ago.
I could find them.
A dinosaur shows up, and he, like, pulls it out, and he's like, "Stop, everybody. You told me how stupid I was to carry this fucking dinosaur tracking batarang. And hey, look at that dinosaur over there.
Fortunately, I have this boomerang."
That's his name now.
He's the fuck, bro. Is this the 50s?
He's actually Cyborg, but he's Protector Bot. Protector gets the dinosaur tracking batarang, but like straps it to Batman and reverses the polarity.
So the dinosaur now finds Batman.
Yes.
Hey, that's a good. I like that one. That's a good ending as well. The Protector just dies of a heroin overdose, and Batman's eaten by a fucking dinosaur.
His face is totally exposed, so he's totally susceptible to dinosaurs.
Batman shows up like, we lost that fucking dinosaur. Where's the dinosaur? I got this batarang. I can find it if you want.
Like, I've got a toothpick that detects when crocodiles are biting me in the crotch.
What would you do without that?
Hey, my toothpick's vibrating. I'm a crotch.
God damn it, fucking crocodile got me. I think that's how he goes. What do you have to add there, Mr. Anything you think of with the Batman dying from either smack or becoming the Cuban mafia guy?
All right. It says, like, "Don't do drugs, Batman. That worked for my cousin."
That worked for my cousin. Yes. That is probably the best ending to Batman ever.
Oh, God. Get some... fentanyl-laced heroin, awesome. And
yeah,
thinks he can handle it because he's Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I've tackled an actual dragon at Ra's al Ghul's place, but it's time to tackle this dragon.
I got the good shit, guys. Come on over here, Teddy.
All right, we can wrap it up and let you go.
Yeah, it was awesome having you on.
It was awesome being here.
Yeah, it was good, cool, man.
Taking the time.
Awesome.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure talking to you, dude. Love your books. Love your work.
Oh, likewise. Thank you. If you guys ever want me on again, I'm totally game.
Fuck yeah.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Right on, man.
Yeah, we enjoyed having you. Man, and
glad you had a good time.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to people.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We feel the same.
Yeah. I share the sentiment. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, man. We'll have a good podcast coming up next, man. Pleasure having you, dude.
Oh, likewise. Bye-bye.
Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Because Nerd. If you liked it, make sure to subscribe, share, rate, or comment. And check out becausenerd.com for even more cool shit. And if the spirit has truly moved you, you can pledge your support directly to us on Patreon. Because Nerd is a production of Scriptic Media.